Well, I want to thank both of you for coming. You know that I'm on the board of directors of Harbord Village, and I guess it was Sussex Ulster when you were on the board.
Yeah.
And we're doing this history committee, and we're meeting people who have been here for a long time because we want to record people's experiences and the changes in particular. So I'm going to ask you first to both give your names, introduce yourselves, say where you live and how long you've been living here, and then we'll go into it after that. Please.
Okay, Anna Barnett. I live at 84 Sussex Avenue.
And Bob Barnett.
Who lives in the same place. And we've both lived here since 1973.
Middle of May, May 15th.
1973.
So that's a little over 40 years.
When we bought our house.
Was there any particular reason that you moved?
Oh, just under 40 years, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Was there some reason that you chose to live on Sussex in this neighborhood?
We looked at different neighborhoods, and we looked in Palmerston, we looked at Riverdale, and this neighborhood seemed to have the best sort of mixture of people. We also looked in Parkdale, I think, a little bit.
At any rate,
Riverdale hadn't happened yet, and Palmerston was all big houses filled with tenants, and we liked the mixture of small houses and the sort of texture of this area.
Yeah, I think there was more to it than that. This was the era when people were ripping out interiors and leaving bare brick and painting everything white. And we, at that point, even were interested in a historical house. So we looked at a lot of places which had just been destroyed to the point of... it was just too much work. Well, the historical detail had been taken out.
Yeah, I think the house brought us.
The house brought us, yeah.
Neighborhood, but we did like the neighborhood.
We liked the neighborhood because, for instance, yeah. Riverdale... You said it hadn't happened yet. It was happening, but Parliament was scary. Parliament was full of people who were drunk and drug addicts and whatever. And so, and we were thinking, we were a young married couple, we were going to have children. So we're thinking even then about schools and neighborhoods. And this just looked friendly.
Yeah.
So.
And I just finished architecture, and we were of a generation that was trained or told by our profs that we should go and rejuvenate the city and build up these downtown neighborhoods. So when we first lived here, five of the guys in my architectural class all lived within one block of our house. So somehow the message sank in. And I guess Martin Myers is the last...
Most of those, yeah.
Oh, no, Colin Anderson. Yeah, so there are still three of us within one block, but two of them have now moved out. So we're kind of rejuvenating the neighborhood. And somehow I was involved in politics even before I got here, because I remember being involved, was I university age? Whenever fighting the Spadina Expressway. I remember being part of a group that was making a movie, and we were doing it over in Rosedale, and we were carrying this coffin, and the coffin symbolized the neighborhood that was going to be destroyed if they brought in the Spadina Expressway, and we were doing all these takes and carrying the coffin. Have I got it wrong? I've got it wrong? Okay.
Totally wrong.
Anna's going to correct me.
I'm sorry that I'm not videotaping this.
Anna's going to correct me.
It wasn't political. It had nothing to do with politics. We were just part of a movie.
Oh, was it?
That was after we were married.
Oh, okay. So, at any rate, at that time, nonetheless, the Spadina Expressway had just, I'm trying to remember, was that 68? Anyway,
yeah, it was a few years before then.
It had just been sort of defeated, and this neighborhood would have been disturbed by the Spadina Expressway, and this was sort of a thing to do, to come down and repopulate it. When we first moved in, my impression at any rate was that it was mostly populated by you know, the old Italian families. There were a lot of the old Italian families, some of the old Jewish families, and I remember the Spitzbergs, and a lot of Portuguese families. And the message that we got when we talked to our neighbors is, hey, this is just a matter of time. This area is going to turn into St. Jamestown. And we're just waiting to cash in because there's going to be big bucks when we sell out to the developers. And we're all moving to Mississauga. And they had some good reason to think that, because the Robert Street playing field was destined to be a high-rise building. And they just built 666 Spadina. And 720 was built when we first sort of moved in, you know, the Pitney Bowes building. But where the Robert Street playing field is, that was destined to be a high-rise apartment. So they, there was neighborhood opposition from our forebears, you know, the Max Vosses and the Pierre Beekmans. And I'm trying to remember who was the president before them. But anyway, those guys fought against that thing that was happening. And the apartment building that would have been in our neighborhood is now built on the south bank of Ramsden. I'm trying to remember the name of the little street, that the one north of Belmont just comes in off Bay Davenport there. So that huge apartment building would have been on Robert Street, but they switched it for the... they used to have a playing field. U of T schools used to have a playing field up there. So they swapped that land to bring the playing fields down to Robert Street. So that's why we still have a playing field and not a great high-rise building, you know, half a block closer to where it is today.
But definitely felt pioneer-like when we first moved.
Absolutely. Oh,
definitely
yeah.
Definitely felt pioneer-like.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there was the old leftist... old guard, like the Beekmans.
Yeah, the Beekmans were here. You should talk to them. They were here before us.
I'm going to write their... Before you leave, I'm going to write their names down.
And, I mean, the story we always tell, Bob's father was an architect, but lived in Leaside and was horrified, horrified that we were moving to the center of the city. I mean, we'd be mugged, we'd be... our house would be vandalized, our cars would be torched. I don't know what he thought. And... so we had the two fathers. My father, who was really worried that the house was sold, it was going to fall down around our ears. And so Bob's father, as an architect, said, no, don't worry, Alex. The house is fine. It's structurally sound. And my father kept saying, well, you know, don't worry about it. We've lived in a center of a major city all our lives. It's fine. They won't get killed if they move down here. So both fathers, Bob's father and my father, were reassuring each other on their in their different ways that we hadn't done a really stupid thing. Yeah. But, I mean, those were the days when everybody was moving to... where did all the Leaside people go?
I forgot. Well, when I graduated with people from Leaside High School. And that generation of people were all moving up to Unionville.
Unionville, yeah.
Like, when I grew up in Leaside, that at Bavin Eglinton, that was the edge of the city. And we had a farm just past our door. And my dad... bought a big lot and severed it into houses, and that was built on Besbra. But we had a farmland behind us. And so when the people who moved in that generation, when they graduated from high school, their idea was to leave the city behind and move to the new frontier at that point, which was Unionville.
And it was the whole thing about, if we have children, there's no way we can bring them up downtown.
No, we need
where back... would they play?
Yeah, we need a backyard.
And, a huge backyard.
Yeah.
You know, I know when I moved to Toronto, I'm from Montreal. Mm-hmm. I'd lived in Palo Alto, California from 1964 to 68. And then I moved here and I lived on Robert Street just north of Harvard. Mm-hmm. And I had grown up in a blue-collar part of Montreal. My mother came to visit and her heart just sank.
Mm-hmm. You know, haven't left.
That's right. I had married this person while he was a medical student. He did his residency at Stanford. Mm-hmm. We came here and there I was back in the slums again. So she had that exact same take on it.
Yeah. Well, we had neighbors across the street who were Portuguese, and it was a very much a dysfunctional family. Mother with mental issues, father who was never there, kids completely out of control. And our house used to be... New Press. So when we bought our house, it wasn't a residence, it was an office.
Oh.
And So, of course, nobody was there during the weekend. Nobody was there in the evenings. And the kids got used to just rampaging through the yard and climbing the trees. And there was a plum tree, and they used to pick the plums. And we had to sort of make them understand that this was no longer their playground. And so there were a few, not confrontations, but a few rubbings between the two families. And I remember the father saying, "You're living in this slum. If you don't like this, you should move out of the slum."
So he was living here.
He was living there. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, your mother, with her heart sinking, that's how he thought of where he was living. He hadn't made it, so he hadn't moved out yet.
But most of the people who were living here at that time, how did they feel about the neighborhood? I mean, I know how that man felt, but a lot of the other people, did they feel that they hadn't made it yet and they were just
waiting? Well, there were the new people coming in, like the Beekmans. Yeah. He worked at University of Toronto, and she's a librarian, not the University of Toronto. He worked in Ontario government and as a planner, and she was a librarian. Lily Gibson was a school teacher. And she,
Hannah was an artist.
That's right. And Hannah would be another one. She was here pretty much when we were too.
I would say that the
those were the newbies. Those were the repopulating people.
So that's the mid-70s.
That's the mid-70s, and that it really started then. I mean, that's when house prices started skyrocketing. Was just a year or two before we bought ours. And so young professional couples started moving in just about then.
It's funny to think of them skyrocketing at that time when you think of where they are now.
Yeah, we bought our house for, I don't think there's any secret here, $50,500.
And it already skyrocketed.
And had skyrocketed. We could have bought it for probably $30,000, $40,000 two years before.
Yeah.
And so we were trying madly to get into the market because the prices were so high.
So we bought our house from New Press, who were running they're actually quite an important publisher of new Canadian literature.
And they were being bought out by McLean Hunter.
McLean Hunter, yeah, that's right.
So it had been totally used as a business.
Yes. Yeah, all the rooms, each room was a different office. I mean, they'd come back. I mean, that's one of the lovely things about our house is people come back and knock on the door and ask to come in and tell us a little bit about its history. And the New Press people came in and said, "Oh, yeah, this used to be John's place." And
what year was your house built?
1885.
So we researched the history. Oh, one of the things that I did in 1985, I got a grant from the city for their 150th anniversary to put plaques on the houses. So you see these little plaques.
Oh, so you're the one who got that?
Yeah.
Because my house has one, 1881.
Oh, okay. Oh, so you've got...
It's the Sesquicentennial Project.
Yeah, oh, that's thank right. you so much. I love it.
So I hired students. And the idea was that the individual would pay, I think, $20, and the students would go down and do all the research, and we get the plaque engraved. And put it up on
lovely that. Plaques. It's lovely. Oh, I'm just so delighted. Thank you very much.
So that was a fun little thing.
That was a fun thing. And I remember the students disappeared and I ended up finishing up the research.
Yeah.
Which was fun, actually. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Is all this information somewhere? I mean, whatever they were researching, or they were researching mainly when each house had been...
Yeah, they were doing it. I don't know how I ended up with everything. It's probably in a box somewhere in the basement, which Anna would very much like to get rid of, but...
I have a feeling it ended up at the office, but I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. The other group of people you should talk to, there aren't many of the old residents left, but you should talk to, should try to find out if there are some, but Santina, who Giovinezzo, lives across the street from us, and she was part of that generation before, and she's one of the few that haven't moved out.
But her English isn't that great.
Her English isn't that great.
Maybe what language?
Italian, but
she can carry on a conversation.
She's a little bit difficult to understand, but certainly you could, and she wouldn't. You'd have to be introduced. Mm-hmm. I don't think she'd talk to a stranger. She's the sort that doesn't open the door unless she knows who's coming. But if her son was there, he could.
Before you leave, after we stop speaking to each other. As we're being recorded. Yeah. I'd like to write some of these ideas down, and I will make
Because there aren't many of the original ethnic. I wonder if Mercedes up the street, I think she was there
yes,
before.
Yes, Helen Breslauer got her permission, and she's agreed to speak to me. Mm-hmm. I haven't called her yet.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because she's quite conversational. She'd be good. But there aren't many left of those old, you know, first it was the Jewish wave, and then it was the Italian wave, and then it was the Portuguese wave. Not many of those folks left of any of those generations.
So you've just covered something that I wanted to talk about. You've talked about the different waves of immigration, which means those are the languages and those were the customs that were.
Yeah.
Who would you say followed that? Is it, as you described, the around the mid-70s when more educated people began to move in? University and
people,
teachers and
people like us, but yeah. It was government employees,
yeah.
University of Toronto employees, just people like us. Like, I'm supposed to be an architect, you know. People just started coming in because it became a neat place to live.
It was no longer the traditional route of coming to Toronto, getting work on Spadina, going to shop in Kensington Market, live in our neighborhood. That sort of disappears. So there really isn't a, in terms of our streets, I don't see an ethnic wave of any sort. It's been, ever since then, it's been a completely mixed bag.
Yeah. When we first moved into our house, we tried to get a mortgage. We went to the bank, and the bank said, I can't remember which one, but we're not giving a mortgage on that place. That's a slum.
Oh.
And those houses are all built of wood down there, and that's just a fire trap.
It's all going to fall down, yeah.
Yeah.
So the bank also felt that way.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got a partial mortgage, but we had to scramble around and find money to get a proper mortgage because the bank wouldn't do it.
Well, I guess these were the simpler houses, and north of Bloor were the more elegant, large, mm-hmm. quote, well-built mm-hmm. homes, I think. Mm-hmm. What must have been their attitude.
And I guess there was a large Hungarian contingent. I mean, Bloor Street was all Hungarian shops and restaurants. Yeah. And
but there weren't many Hungarians living
on
our street.
Not living, no, you're right. But I mean, the guys still hang out on Bloor Street. Some of the old Hungarian guards still hang out there.
Yeah, Hungarian Castle and Annie Rath.
And the Blue Cellar, the Blue Cellar room.
Yeah, the Blue Cellar, yeah. And the Hungarian deli was here. That lasted until 10 years ago.
Yeah, maybe a bit longer.
So the only one left is Country Style.
Yeah.
The only Hungarian restaurant. Yeah. And it's a busy place.
Is it?
Yes.
Do you know, I've never been in it.
Well, my husband, Paul, is from Slovakia.
Okay.
And he speaks Hungarian. Mm-hmm. And our friends Tommy and Katka speak Hungarian. Okay. So we go there. And it's a busy place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they're doing well. And the portions are gigantic.
Mm-hmm. Blue Cellar Room used to have the Wiener Schnitzel, remember?
Yeah.
So you know what? Let's stick to the stores for a while. Mm-hmm. And if we can talk about Bloor, Harvard, College, Spadina.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm going to kind of rein us in because you've touched on so much that I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm
mm-hmm.
going to come back to you talk about renovations of your home. So we'll come back to that. But let's think of the stores on these the three major streets.
Well, I can't think of much on Harvard.
Harvard was
Jack Nunez used to run the building that was formerly owned by Krangel's Collision, which is now Tino and Torreira.
Okay.
No, Harvard was dead, except for the Harvard Bakery. I can't think of anything that was happening.
No, Harvard Bakery was there, but didn't seem to be anything much else.
So nothing much commercial, really.
Well, I'm sure it was commercial. It had to be commercial because it's shaped like commercial, but
nothing of interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'd never go there, but Bloor Street.
What was on
it was
Bloor
only
not 15 sushi.
There was a better mixture.
There was a much better mixture. Far fewer restaurants.
So what
far
was
fewer
there?
Restaurants.
Well, I remember there were two Weiner's Hardware a block apart.
Barber Gus the barber.
And they weren't owned by the same Weiner's. I mean, there was
competing the family
old,
members.
No, just another Weiner's Hardware. Which is where the natural food place is now.
Mm-hmm. And Gus the Barber was where the Ukrainian place is. Future Bakery is.
Yeah, that's right.
And there was where Kinko's is on the corner was the pharmacy.
That was Starkman's
chemist. Chemist, yeah.
Oh.
And there was another chemist across the street.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there was another drugstore over there.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I remember the food, where the Floor Super Save or whatever it's called now was. Remember the there was a store there. We swore that they got everything off the back of a truck that fell off the back of the truck because everything was cheap and rotten, half rotten, and I can't either.
Huh. Were there corner stores around you were here?
Yep.
And if so, where?
All right. Brunswick and Sussex. On the south east corner was a shoemaker.
Good memory.
Oh my God.
Across the street from us on Major and Sussex, northwest corner was Andre's, which was
who still lives there. Oh, he'd be a good guy to talk to too. Andre's been there since before we were there.
And he had a little variety store, typical little variety store, right on the corner.
What's his origin? What's he?
Portuguese. He's Portuguese.
Our house was a business. It was a publishing company.
Before that, it was a children's bookstore and Sussex Research. And before that, I've got all the information at home. But we'll go back. It used to be a junk dealer. The junk dealer had all his stuff in the boulevard along beside the house. And his wife was a seamstress, I think.
Wow. And so she had a little home business.
Yeah. So we've met that family as well. They've been around. And then before that, it was wax.
That's history of our house. We're talking about.
Interesting. That's our neighborhood.
Shut it down.
Yeah.
Wax Furriers was in the 30s, and they're the ones that built the little store on the side of our house. And then we can go right back historically. It was built in 1885, but in 1995, a gentleman that worked at Eden's, who was a carpenter. 1895. He was a carpenter at Eaton's, built the third story on our house and the addition on the back. So we know of that historically, you know. Our house used to look like the rest of the row, but this guy took it and turned it into a bit more of a something anyways.
Well, the places that used to be corner stores look like corner stores. They just put window coverings, whereas your house doesn't look as if it had been a commercial.
Well, the side window definitely does. I mean, that's a store window where I have all my plants on the.
Oh, that's interesting because I just like seeing your plants.
That's a typical entryway for a shop. And Andre has completely redone his house because his used to look like a convenience store. It had that corner entrance.
Jeez, I remember the time he'd been robbed, and he was running down the street after the robber and yelling and.
No.
Okay.
Oh, what I do remember is him sacrificing the sheep in the middle of the street for Easter or something.
Yeah. Oh, they used to put
it right on the corner of your street where
he did it in the driveway with the blood running into the gutter. Upset quite a few people.
So when were you already here?
Oh yeah.
So you watched him do this on the street?
I don't know if I watched him, but it's certainly part of the lore.
It's vivid. Yeah.
Part of the lore. Mm-hmm. Oh man, I miss that shoemaker.
Yeah.
That's why I remember him. I used to go to him all the time.
Huh. Okay.
You don't remember the shoemaker being there?
Don't remember the shoemaker, no. Huh. Okay.
Did you use College Street much? I mean, do you know much about
this? No.
You know that's
And we never went to Kensington Market. I mean, it wasn't... Well, actually, we did.
Excuse me, one of our first dates was in...
One of our first dates was in Kensington Market.
That sounds very romantic.
That's right, yeah. That's right.
Amongst the tomatoes?
I was new to Toronto, and Bob was showing me the... I mean, it was very...
ethnic.
It was very anti-WASP. It was super anti-WASP.
Un-WASP, not anti, but...
It was almost anti-WASP. I mean, Bob was very much... grew up in a WASP family, so he was he's been rebelling all his life against being brought up by these Anglos.
Was it a very Jewish market at that time, or mixed?
It was mixed. It was still Jewish. It was still it was largely Portuguese. Mm-hmm. I would say Portuguese and Italian at that point.
But so you used it a bit, and that's where you courted. But it's not. You know what I'm seeing is that the people who lived closer to college used that artery. Mm-hmm. And people didn't move very much. So if you live closer to Bloor, that's where your life was.
Yeah, no, our life was definitely Bloor Street.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're a block away.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was nothing on Harvard, so you don't walk three long blocks all the way down to college.
Yeah, that's
so.
Right. Yeah.
If you need milk, you go to Bloor Street.
And people laugh when I say I'm going up to St. Clair, or certainly up to Eglinton. Yeah.
Do you?
Well, if I have a meeting, I have peer supervision once a month, and I sometimes. But really, it's really going up there.
Yeah.
Dominion Star was always there. The JCC was always there. Trying to think. The library was up. No, the library.
The library was there.
Yeah, I guess the library was there. I thought the library came when they converted the Baptist Seminary or whatever it was into the First Nations complex. I think the library was the second building part of that.
Where was the library?
Just at Barron Spadina.
Oh, so it moved north. Where it is now, it's north.
Well, I don't know whether there was a library before. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was. My memory of it is that when they built the First Nations housing complex and the main building,
library. Right, because I think I remember going to the library with the kids on Palmerston.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're saying there was a library at Bloor and Spadina?
Well, the existing library.
Oh, the existing library.
The existing library came into effect when our kids were young, which would have been...
mid-80s?
You know, 1980-ish, the kids were four sort of thing. Yeah.
You know, I grew up in Montreal. There was one library with English books. It was on Dorchester. Miss Vaughn was a librarian. Mm-hmm. So when I moved to California and then I came here, I couldn't believe the number of libraries. I couldn't believe it. To me, every city has one library with English books. So I just thought this was an amazing place with so many libraries.
Mm-hmm. Honestez was certainly there because that's where you went when you got your apartment before we were married.
Sorry, I'm eating your dinner here.
Please do. That's why I put it out. But, people have also talked about movie theaters. Were they still here when you came in 73? That there were a lot of movie theaters.
Oh, yes, there's a wonderful movie theater. Oh, and we used to go to college. Remember the Spanish restaurant? Mm-hmm. Right next to the cinema?
Don Quixote's. Yeah, we went down there.
There are a couple of good, and that pizza place that's right on the corner of Robert and College.
Yep. So you went there more for entertainment and some food as opposed to
Don
the practical.
Don Quixote's definitely, and then on Spadina. There's Jerusalem. Remember the Jerusalem? The Israeli restaurant? And
down farther.
Where?
South of College.
South of College on Spadina.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And right across on... College on the south side at Spadina, there was also a Jewish deli that was really good.
Yeah.
So what do you see the changes? I mean, generally speaking,
Can I just say that when I went to U of T, the architecture school down in College, and our hangout, we used to go and play pool at where the Alma Combo is now. And so the other thing was the Silver Dollar. I don't know, is the Silver Dollar still there? At any rate, is it? Okay, at any rate, that was our drinking place, and the guys used to get there, you know, somebody's birthday or whatever, we'd go over and they'd get quite tanked. And I remember one student in our class in particular, the doors had the crash bars, and this guy was so drunk he was just falling down. At any rate, they put his arms through the crash bar. And so he was just kind of hanging on the door, and you know, the people.
So it hasn't changed very much.
And they used to have strippers. So we'd all go over and watch the strippers and have a few beers.
Well, that was
a
victory.
No, that's further down. No. But the Silver Dollar had strippers.
Okay.
And we'd go out, you know, drink beer. And of course, the guys worked all night. I used to commute back up to Leaside, but the guys would be working all night and stuff. And we'd go over and have a few beers, and there'd be the stripper and the beer. It's quite something.
Good old days. You know, you said that your family's had some different views about where you were living, and it was a slum, and you're wasting your money, you're going to lose it. What about, and But you were happy to live in the core, mm-hmm. live centrally. What about security and safety then and now?
I never felt insecure there at all.
No, I mean, we never... Well, I mean, we really didn't lock our doors. I mean, I would go up to Bloor Street and go shopping. And especially in the summertime. Well, now we definitely lock our doors. How's that?
Well, but that's, I mean, that's important
to talk
about. But
we've never really felt unsafe living downtown. The kids grew up there.
They'd were your children born in that house?
Yes. Oh, yeah. And they'd come home, like, they'd come home at 10 and 11 o'clock at night, and we never had any worries about them being molested or robbed or anything. It just never occurred to us.
Well, from nothing else, because they'd grown up here, well, at that time of night, nobody was there, I guess, but you knew all the shopkeepers. You went to the, it's still a dry cleaners, but what was the name of the family?
Knob Hill.
Knob Hill, what was the name of the family?
It was Rose.
Oh, man, her son was an architect.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Her son finished architecture and he decided to go back into the dry cleaning business of his mom. I don't know what happened because they sold the business afterwards. Anyway, I mean, they used to give candy to the kids. Oh, Winer's Hardware knew the kids. Oh. You know,
they knew them by name.
They knew everybody. So the kids knew.
So would the kids ever go in and say, I want this or want this, and they would write it down? And
those days were gone.
Okay.
Those days were gone.
But they knew the kids and would welcome them, and the kids felt comfortable to go there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a difference. I mean, now we still have some small stores, but I don't think people know. They don't know the names of the kids, and the kids don't know their names, I think.
Yeah, and in certain cases, you still do, but...
They still know me up at Winer's Hardware, but I've done architectural work for them, and I've known Marty for many, many years, 40
Since
years.
He's a little kid.
Yeah.
Is he's the person who's running it now.
Marty Weiner still runs that store, yeah.
And was it his father or grandfather?
Jerry ran it before that.
When his grandfather started it.
Mm-hmm. And he's...
They got pictures up over the door of all the different generations, yeah.
Well, I certainly shopped there.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at the pictures. So in terms of safety, your children felt safe. And you lock your doors now. Do you feel safe to walk here at night?
Oh, yes.
Oh, heavens.
It wouldn't occur to me not to.
Yeah. I do too.
I mean, I've seen vandalism, and we certainly experienced vandalism, but we always experienced vandalism. I mean, the Brunswick.
We had the house broken into a couple times, you know. I mean, not often. We left the door open. Leave the door. Yeah, somebody came in just the last couple of years and actually broke the window to get in, and our tenant walked in at the same time, and
she walked in the back door to see that somebody was in the front hall. And both Bob was out of town, I was out of the country, and she just happened to walk in as he... I was actually... Anyway. Yeah, she walked in as he was sort of heading up the stairs or coming down the stairs, and she freaked him out and he ran away. And I was coming home from the airport, and I walked in the doorway to find the hallway full of men. I realized they were in...
Police uniforms.
Police uniforms and vests. What's going on? But, you know, people toss garbage over the fence. They get drunk. They try to knock our copper posts off the top. It used to be students. I think it's still students. They just get stupid.
Yeah. We used to have a rubber raft, a big one, that we would fill up as a swimming pool for the kids.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. So we took the water out of it, and somebody stole it, you know? I mean, it's just idiot stuff like that.
Yeah. But you're saying that it felt safe then, and it still does now, although you lock your doors.
I would say the incidence of petty crime has increased. It would, in the 70s, or even until the last 10 years, I don't think it would occur to you that somebody was going to break into your car.
Here's
now,
a funny story.
Now people break into your car and steal
it. Yeah, we've had our car broken into, what, 3 times? Outside the
house? So even if you don't have something that looks inviting, they'll still break in, or is it if they see something?
Oh, no, there are inviting things left in the station wagon because some of us don't think.
Well, some of us think that it's going to be so much trouble to take it in every single night, but now I've learned I have to take everything out of the car.
Which is a difference.
So if you don't have anything that looks tempting.
I'm going to tell you a couple other stories.
Please do.
We have a very nice lamp hanging in front of our house.
This is an interesting story.
And we got home and realized the lamp wasn't there anymore. Just the bare wire hanging down. So I printed up wanted posters for our light and took it around to the antique dealers. And
down the antique market down at Queens Quay that was there.
Yeah. So one of the dealers said, why don't you go over
to... No, actually he said something more interesting than that. Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. No,
he said, where do you live? And Bob told him where we live. And he said, oh, in that case, why don't you try this address?
Broadview and Queen. There's an antique store down there that you might go and have a look at. So I went down to the store, and I think it was on a Sunday.
Yep, it was Sunday.
And there was my lamp hanging in the window. So there was a cop car sitting across the street, so there's me knocking on the door saying, my lamp in there, these guys have obviously stolen it. So they said, well, just don't do anything for a little while. We're doing an investigation, and we're closing in on them. These guys are fencing things. So they were taken to court, and I went and testified, and we did get our lamp back. So then, a few months later, we picked up a copy of... A couple of years later, we picked up a copy of Toronto Life magazine. And
I looked at it, and it was about Riverdale?
I guess it was Riverdale.
Anyway, it was about a neighborhood where gentrification had happened on half of the street and not on the other. And it had interviews with families, and it said whenever the police get called to this neighborhood, they know exactly which address to go to, and they had full pictures of the yuppies and of the other family. And I said to Bob, oh, look, this is an interesting article. And he looked at it and he said, those are the guys that stole our lamp. I remember them from court.
Those are the guys that were in court.
Those were on the yuppie side of the street.
No, these are the troublemakers that the police...
These are the old-time...
Irish.
the white trash that had lived there for umpteen generations. And, you know, they were into the kind of seedy stuff.
So that's one of our... The crime was more sophisticated before. Now it's just smash and grab.
It's so interesting that this guy sent you to the right place.
Yeah, so we gave him $100, that's for sure. But our lamp is back out there today. I didn't knock on wood.
Yeah, we didn't put that lamp back up for decades.
Maybe 20 years, yeah.
Because we didn't want it stolen again.
But now it's back out with our fingers crossed. There was some other theft story that was funny, and I can't remember what it was. Something else along that vein.
That happened to you or a neighbor?
Oh, I know. No, we're talking about community safety. So, one of the stories that we should follow through is my historic role with the Old Residents Association. But at one time, we were fighting a group who wanted to bring a very active restaurant in, the sort that would have entertainment and whatever, up where the Kinko's is there at Major and Blur. So
they were there for a while.
Yeah.
The Mexican place or whatever it was?
Well, no, these were other guys. These are people that had been involved with the Brunswick House, and they were making a liquor license, and they wanted to have this big thing. And I was fighting it, and some of the other people on the street, like Asher Edinger, and who else? Mm-hmm. Somebody down just south of them. At any rate, I had a death threat phoned into me. Mm. You know, if you don't stop fighting our application, you know, members of your family are going to be dead, sort of thing. And
Asher, they moved out.
They moved out. And somebody south, I just can't remember which house it was, had their car bashed in with concrete blocks thrown through in the back lane, concrete blocks thrown through the windshield. And all as this was going on, just as we were appearing at the Liquor License Board opposing this application.
Yes, so being part of the Residents Association has not always been...
So what year would that have been? I mean, approximately. 80s.
Early 80s.
Early 80s.
Yeah.
So one of the families moved away.
Yeah.
That's not the family who had their car.
No, that's
a different family.
And did they stay or did they leave?
I think they stayed. I don't think they're there. I can't remember.
It wasn't Gary and Cheryl, was it?
No, it wasn't Gary and Cheryl. No, they never got that involved.
You must have been quite terrified, I would think.
Yeah.
Considering the threat and what they had done to that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you stayed.
And these guys said some, I can't remember what they said anymore, but they said some pretty seedy things to me at the hearings. You know, they come and say, if you don't do this, then, you know. At any rate, literally having a death threat phoned in at 3 o'clock in the morning isn't the nicest thing in the world.
But you decided to stay.
Well, we stayed.
Bob's pigheaded. He would stay because of that.
Anyway, so it was kind of a mafia-like group that was running the Brunswick Coast, and these guys were looking to take over more locations.
Well, the Brunswick House is still not a favorite place for our neighborhood.
Yeah. So that was one. Well, I used to go off and in the old days, the Residents Association was very, very much, a couple people. We'd have meetings every now and then, but it was a couple of people really carrying the can, not, you know, block people and all the stuff that we do today. But,
There were two super controversial things that I remember, I think, while you were, if not in charge. And one was the maze, the traffic maze.
Oh, traffic maze was extremely early. That came in just as we were...
My grandfather was alive.
Just when we first moved in.
My grandfather was alive because he came to visit us, and I remember we sat him on a chair on the corner and had him count cars.
Count cars, turning left, turning right,
so that,
going straight through against the roof.
And he died when Alex was two or three, so that was...
Were you one of the people responsible for
the maze? No, that had been approved before we got in. So we moved in 73, and it had already been approved.
Not for taking a while.
It was in on a sort of a trial basis.
That's true. They did some streets.
Yeah. So it was kind of solidified during our era.
Did it make the difference that people...
Oh, huge. People used to go zooming because it was all one way, like Manning and Euclid. People would just go zooming down all the time. Yeah. You know?
So it worked.
It really did keep a lot of the traffic out of the neighborhood.
And the second thing, which I mentioned to you before, was the... I can't use the word. People beginning to get rid of the Victorian architectural detail on their houses. That was an enormous controversy, fight, clash of cultures, clash of classes.
You didn't want to say Portuguese?
No, I didn't want to.
So we won't say it. We won't say it. Yeah.
And that was a huge effort. And
We got Neil Wright, and credit to him, because we put out a brochure with pictures of some of these details. And Neil Wright said, your house is worth more if you have these details on the house. And he's right, you know, and we were putting these flyers at everybody's house.
It reminded me very much at that point, sorry, it's off topic, of the protests against the Vietnam War in the States.
Yeah.
Because I was going to graduate school in North Carolina, and of course, everybody was for the war. And when we were protesting, we felt the only way to get to people was to tell them how much it was costing. We figured that they would understand. And this was the same thing. We were basically saying...
Money.
Yeah.
That's so interesting because I was in Palo Alto and I was protesting against the Vietnam War, against napalm, about all this. If that was 64 to 68 that I was there.
Yeah, 68, 70.
Yeah. So I guess where I was going with my story is that I would go off and fight these applications at Committee of Adjustment.
You're always fighting them.
Bob, the lone wolf. I'd be at the Liquor License Board fighting applications. I'd be at Committee of Adjustment. I'd go to the OMB. And I actually won some cases at the OMB. And they would have a lawyer and a planner and all this whole team assembled. You know, so there'd be sort of six or eight of them. And then I'd show up all by myself, and I actually won some at the OMB. So that was really quite exciting.
So that was a time-consuming commitment that you had to this
community. I've always been a bit of a nutcase, you know. I mean, I take on these crusade things.
Well, but the biggest, I'm on your side, of course, so I appreciate
the biggest battle was Doctors' Hospital. because Doctors Hospital wanted to build a pretty big hospital over on Brunswick. And we didn't want that to happen. You know, we thought it was too big for the neighborhood. It was out of place, you know. So we really fought pretty hard against that. And some
plus
of the things...
they had a cruddy reputation.
I mean, it was an awful hospital.
People used to say, you know, as the ambulance is taking you away, you can hear the people just saying, just not Doctor's Hospital.
Yeah. So ultimately it came down to an OMB fight. And we raised quite a bit of money. I don't know, it was, at the time it seemed like a lot. It might have only been $15,000, but we raised a lot of money. And I hired Carl Jaffrey, who had recently been a city councillor, to help us at the OMB. And so we fought at the OMB, and we lost. But we slowed them down immensely. And then they had, this guy Brian McFarlane was the head of the hospital, and he was just my arch enemy. So he arranged to have David Peterson, who was the premier of the day, come to announce the new hospital being built, and they were having a big ceremony. And I was it just me or was it a bunch of people? Anyway,
a couple of people.
Their small group was there protesting, you know, this thing. And they didn't want to have us protesting when the premier was there. So they were trying to shut us up. And
it got physical, as far as I remember.
It got pretty physical that they didn't want these people around objecting to this thing. So I can't remember how it happened, but basically we made a big mess of their presentation.
So you had to fight hard.
Oh, yeah. Goodness.
Oh, yeah.
To not let this place become very different.
Well,
from that.
That's what I'm thinking.
So ultimately, they never got their funding. I don't know whether new government, I can't remember the details, but they never did get their funding. And now it's an old folks' home. It's much lower scale. It's much quieter for the neighborhood. We don't have ambulances, you know.
But, you know, like when we're talking about the architectural detail, I mean, the salesmen of aluminum siding and angel stone were incredibly aggressive. I mean, they went door to door in this neighborhood promoting their product. And there was a real danger that it was all going to disappear. Or all. You can see some of the streets. Margaret Farley Park on the north side. Yeah. That's Ulster, right?
Yeah.
On the north side of Ulster. And you can see the beautiful row of Victorians, and suddenly after two, it's gone. And all these
angel stone
square flat roof things are there. Yeah. So we could have certainly lost the character of the neighborhood. And it was a constant battle against foes from every direction.
So I was fighting, I haven't finished with my Doctor's Hospital story. In fighting Doctor's Hospital, I got spending a fair bit of time with Larry Grossman, who was our local member, and he was conservative at the time. And, you know, I'd spent a fair bit of time talking to him. And his assistant was Harriet Wolman. And she later went on to a political career up in Richmond Hill. But the opposition, the Brian McFarlanes, got to telling people that I was sleeping with Harriet Wolman. So this was...
Well, actually what they said was, he's in bed with her.
Yeah.
But of course they're speaking to the Italian
and the Portuguese
community, who immediately said, oh, Barnett, he's sleeping with her. Things got quite dramatic.
Things were pretty hairy, you know. Yeah.
But you persevered. You didn't back down, obviously.
Bob never backs down. At one time,
I sort of got fired by the Residents Association because I thought I was doing too much on my own hook. And Rosie Smith was... You should talk to Rosie, too, as part of this.
Just write her name down, please.
Yeah, her name.
Yeah, good.
At any rate, we should be more democratic, and, you know, the association should be deciding who we're fighting against and all this kind of thing. So I think I had a little hiatus of not being president for 2 or 3 years because Rosie ran me out of town a little bit. And then eventually I got back in as president, if I remember.
What were your years?
Oh, I can't remember anymore.
Approximately?
80s.
Yeah.
80s, yeah.
Yeah.
But you really worked 80s, hard. 80s,
maybe early 90s. At any rate, yeah. It was before Harvard Village. And I'm trying to think who was after me. Sarah Hastie was after me. Max Voss, Pierre Beekmans were before me. Dick Nellis was before me. Kathleen Craig were before me as head of the Residents Association. No, actually, I'm trying to think. Maybe Dick Nellis and Catherine Craig were after me. Anyway,
But it's a list of committed people,
yeah,
I think.
No, there were some good people who should go down on the record because they carried the can for many, many years, you know.
Well, and you kept the buildings from becoming high-rises.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is very important to our neighborhood.
Yeah. And the U of T always kind of had to be kept in check.
Oh, the U of T was another very bad neighbor.
Yeah.
Somebody.
We had one historic meeting on the U of T Graduate Center where they were proposing this building and the great big O hanging out over the street and all that. So a bunch of us went and they had a big meeting at the JCC, I think, on that. And a bunch of us went from the community. It was just packed with people. Well, it turns out that Stephen Teeple, who had designed the building, was sort of a famous architect, you know. So the architectural community came out in huge numbers, and they're all dressed.
They were very funny because they were all standing around the perimeter of the room. You know where the second cuff is right now? That was a meeting room. Or was it upstairs? Maybe it was upstairs.
I think it was upstairs.
At any rate,
it was a big, big meeting room.
And all the architecture students dressed in black
It wasn't just architecture students. It was the profs.
Oh, yes.
It was the well-known architects.
What's his name? From
Bruce Kubera.
Bruce Kubera was
there. You know, all the architects.
Bruce Kubera got up and said he thought it was a wonderful building and he was an architect. And Bob got up and said, Bruce, I went to school with you. I'm an architect too.
And this is a piece of garbage and you're insulting our community. You know? It was that kind of a night.
Oh,
anyways, they went ahead and built that building. But, I'm eating all your food here.
Well, that's why I put it out.
So, yeah, that's pretty much everything.
Somebody described the U of T as a bully. To this neighborhood.
Yeah, I think I did in the email I sent you.
Okay,
yeah.
Maybe that was it.
Very much.
Yeah, and they get on their high horse and condescend, which was really interesting because a lot of people here, and they think they're better than
their gift to us.
Yes.
Well, you know, we have Sue Dexter now, who is our liaison person.
Yeah.
So we always have some fair sense of what is about to happen, what their plans are.
Mm-hmm.
And there's communication constantly happening, and she speaks up.
Yeah. You know who else has been here forever is...
Ismay
Bitty.
Yeah.
I want to move back briefly to... You bought a commercial property, and you made it into a home. So I'd like to move back and talk about... the kinds of changes that people have made to homes. And you were saying, of course, you didn't like when the Portuguese wanted to take all the charm and all the character.
Mediterraneanize the houses.
Okay. So any more comments that you'd like to make about the homes and the changes that have occurred or that people have maintained? Any more comments about that?
Well, our house had built-in plywood 1960s, you wouldn't even call it furniture, benches. And, you know, they'd taken out the fireplace and built this plywood fireplace surround, and it was all painted turquoise.
White and turquoise.
White and turquoise was the colors, and sort of blood red were the color schemes for the house. So we had a lot of ripping out to do. And I remember we had our friends over it, and they were pulling it away, and great piece of plaster would come out with, you know, if they're pulling this junk off. And anyways, we put it all back together and rebuilt the plaster, like not taken it down, not stripped it. We've just rebuilt it, but we don't have insulation and we've kept the old windows. you know, so it rattles around and it uses a lot of heat, but we've tried to just put it back the way it was.
I think
including the slate roof, which is my masterwork of my life, probably.
Yeah,
so rebuilding, putting a whole
so
slate roof.
It's very dear to your heart.
On this roof, you know.
Yeah. With the kids.
Yeah, with the kids.
So you lived in the house and you were doing a lot of work.
Oh, that's
constantly.
What everybody did.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah. One
that's what everybody did. Everybody, like, I don't know any, that's something that's brand new.
Yeah.
People buying houses and not living in them for a year while they renovate is something that just didn't exist. I mean,
people couldn't afford it.
No,
yeah, how do they carry
that.
The house for a year while they're doing $200,000 worth of renovations?
If
that,
if it's $200,000. But I mean, it just really didn't. All of us, and we were all professionals. I mean, we weren't all professionals, but it was that crowd that was moving in. It was the professor, it was the teachers, it was the psychologists, it was the...
So people couldn't afford to live in one place and pay for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus all the other...
So what you did is you did a room.
Yeah.
And when you got that room done, you did another room. Yeah. And maybe 2 years would go by and then you'd have enough money to do a third room. Maybe people weren't going into debt as much as they are now. I don't know. It might be an economic thing. But as trends in... As trends in style come through, you can see that. I mean, it almost hurts to see the houses being gutted and
all the stuff going out in the bin, all
changed.
The trim and everything.
Yeah.
Just
One of the things that I see, which happened to this house, I have no idea when, is they change the front. So a lot of people get rid of this, whatever it's called, the overhang.
Yeah, the porch, porch roof.
Yeah. Yeah, which means I can't sit outside while it's raining.
That's right.
When I lived on Robert Street, I could sit outside on a nice, warm, rainy day, and it was just beautiful, and I can't do it unless
or
I sit with an umbrella.
For that matter, get in your front door
with
the key without getting soaking wet.
Yeah. But that's one thing that I see a lot of. Oh, we're moving in, we're going to upgrade it, we're going to modernize it, get rid of that.
Well, even friends that we have now who we quite like say things like, you don't have central air conditioning?
Mm-hmm.
No, we don't.
We don't even have a dishwasher.
But that may be us. But now it's the same thing as when we were growing up, people's apartments. People's expectations now are so much inflated.
Oh, yeah.
So much inflated.
I noticed the word need.
We need.
Yeah.
Something which, of course, need is not the right word, but that's the word that they use.
And I see that a huge difference between, that's just a North American thing, between, let's say, European expectations and North American expectations suddenly.
Oh, yeah.
If you have four people, you need 4,000 square feet.
Yeah. Would you comment just generally on the changes of the street? Just how people are using the sidewalks, how people are using the street itself. See some changes that way?
I see much less use of the street. When our kids were little, the kids played in the laneways, the kids played hockey in the street. I'm not home as much, so I don't see it as much, but there are constantly children.
Yeah.
There are children everywhere.
Yeah. Using the street,
using
the sidewalks, using the road, and using the lane also.
There were so many young kids all within a block, you know. I don't know, they're 10 little kids all the same age as our
Well, just think about Halloween. We used to expect 100 kids.
Yeah.
And last couple of years we had 20, 30.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of them actually have been brought in from somewhere else, because I don't recognize any of them, but...
So you think there are fewer children, and the children who are here are on the street less?
I think so.
I mean, they're more in programs or in the house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That may just be kind of a cyclical thing, but we were young families moving in, and all the kids were sort of the same age, and, you know, the one family's kids babysit our kids, and it was all very, very friendly, and the mothers all would walk up and down the street together. So... That's sort of changed. It seems to be a lot of more or less empty nesters at this point. A lot of people our age, maybe we can afford to live there. And because it wasn't expensive when we moved in, you know. I
see a few young families on my street, on both sides.
There are some.
But the kids are in daycare or they're in programs, mm-hmm. so they're not playing on the sidewalk mm-hmm. and on the road as much or at all.
Well, and when our kids were growing up, the playing field on Robert was very, very active.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
Now it's locked.
And now it's locked, and the ice, the skating rink doesn't work, and the tennis courts are falling apart. I mean, our kids are always there.
Yeah.
And I never took my son to hockey and basically said, "Do you want to play hockey? Go ahead."
That's a loss to not have those spaces open and kept up.
I think there were more people sitting out in front of the houses.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like the Santinas and the Mercedes still do that. Mm-hmm. But
we do that.
We do that a bit, but there used to be a lot more people out. The street was a place where...
Yeah, you know, that's very true, because especially... since we've had over the past 10, 15 years the influx of what is on our street called stupid rich people who have never become part of the neighborhood and they drive into the house from the back, like they drive into the laneway, they park their car, they go into the house from the back door, and you actually never see them.
Yeah. So it's not a community the way it used to be.
It still is, but it's we work at it. And it has to be worked at now. We have our Christmas party. Our Major Street Christmas party every year.
The North Block and Major has a Christmas party every year.
To which everyone is invited on the street. And it's at a different house every year.
Yeah.
And the renters almost never come. The younger families almost never come. They're invited. We knock on the door. We hand them an invitation, but they don't participate.
Major Street seems to have had more of that real sense of of a community,
mm-hmm.
because I've spoken to several people in some south, but some of them want to talk only about Major Street because mm-hmm. it has been such a powerful influence and sense of community for them.
Huh.
So Major Street seems to be quite special that way.
Yeah.
I mean, I love this community. Mm-hmm. It's my community.
Yeah.
And when I lived on Robert Street, I mean, I've been here now for 25 years, but when I became an empty nester, but when I lived on Robert Street, we sat outside till 12:30 at night on the front porches. Mm-hmm. Just yakking.
Drinking beer? Because we do get that. We get the university students sitting out on the front porch drinking beer, making a lot of noise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we do get a lot of those sort of university age parties, and I get fed up. One of my tricks is 3 o'clock in the morning when I'm tired of all the noise, I put on my dressing gown and I go and join the party.
It makes them go inside very quickly.
Puts a little damper on the activities, you know. I don't want this old fart around in his pajamas. No, they don't give me a beer, that's for sure. They don't invite me in.
My husband Paul feels the same way. We have 2 bedrooms upstairs, so when they become really noisy, we move to the back bedroom because he gets really upset. But, when you first moved here and there was more a variety of cultures, was there a real joining, or where was it kind of separate that the Portuguese people hung out with
each other? It's always pretty separate. It was never much joining, I don't think. I mean, everybody was friendly, said hello, but today the few that are left are sort of, you know, they sort of join in a bit. You know, we know Santina and other people.
They're kind of the old-timers, yeah.
There's hardly any of them left. You know? I mean, if they're going to have any social life at all, they have to talk to us, I guess.
Well, there's Mrs. Brown next door and the Spitzbergs after.
Oh, poor Mrs. Spitzberg, and they were incontinent and couldn't get up the stairs, so they'd pee in the backyard. And then we had, not into a pond, to just pee in the backyard. So we had terrible, terrible cockroaches for years.
Oh.
And finally the Spitzbergs, she died, he moved to an old folks home, and miraculously, a month or two later, the cockroaches had all gone away. Now, I can't really blame it on them, but I mean, they couldn't do any housekeeping.
No, they were beyond it.
Couldn't even use a toilet, you know?
very unpleasant for you.
It wasn't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the poor people, you felt so sorry for them.
Yeah, that's right.
No, there's no way to look after
them. We go in and talk to them, but it wasn't a very happy existence.
No, not we're that generation.
Well,
but you're not doing some of the things they did.
Right. We're probably the same age. We're just a bit more with it, you know.
Could you talk specifically about backyards? How you remember people using
them? We've never had one.
Uh-huh. You have all that lovely stuff around the...
We're just
on your corner.
Yeah, we have a separate front yard, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But do you have a sense of how people use their backyards those years?
Not really.
Uh-huh. Well, all right, you weren't around as much. I hung around with the moms.
Yeah, that's right. You used to play in Sharon's backyard.
Sharon's, Cheryl's, Ann's.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Yeah.
So we did use them a lot. I would say there just wasn't... Things were shabbier.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have the fine decks and the horticultural displays, and whatever was there was there.
So mothers and our families were using them a bit, mm-hmm. but they weren't manicured.
No, they were certainly not manicured.
Yeah. Well, that's a change, because what people described from a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Is some people use it just as a catch-all for their junk,
mm-hmm.
or other people just had lots of vegetables,
mm-hmm.
and then they could feed the families.
Yeah. Certainly, I remember chickens.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about that.
Well, just hearing chickens in the backyard. I mean, people did keep poultry.
I can't think of anybody in particular that had them, but I do remember.
Yeah,
people. I remember people used to have pigeons. You know, roosting.
Pigeon coops. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I can't remember a particular house.
But you heard them.
You'd hear them and you'd see them. You knew they were around the neighborhood. But.
And of course, they were the people who grew pot on their roof. But that's.
I hope you were friends with them. What about heating your houses? How was your house heated when you first came? Is it the same now?
It was oil, right? It was always gas.
But our first furnace was probably as big as your kitchen.
Yeah, that's right. The office that was oil. That's right. We've been gas ever since.
I mean, this was this huge octopus of a thing that took up an entire.
Yeah.
It was enormous. Yeah. It was huge. Yeah. And now we have this little thing about.
Yeah.
This big that hangs on the wall.
Yeah.
But. It's always been gas. We have rods.
Uh-huh.
So that's another reason why in our house central air conditioning would be.
Oh my God! You'd have to take the walls.
It would have to take. Yeah. It'd be awful.
Cause we dug up the backyard because I put paving, big pavers in, and not the concrete ones. And in digging that up, we found all sorts of neat old bottles. So I'm sure what people used to do is just heave all the stuff out the back door. And we still have a horse hitching post right by our back.
Yeah, we do. An original. Behind our kitchen. There's a horse hitching post.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So
you can get a horse.
That's right.
So we have a whole bunch of bottles that were dug up in our backyard because that used to just be the local tip, you know.
But they weren't broken. Or maybe
some of them were broken.
Do you have them? You kept them?
Oh, yeah. We still got them.
Where's the mezuzah that we used to have?
I'm not sure. We found a piece of newspaper from 1895 in the wall one time, and I can't remember where that is. It probably disintegrated by now, but that's how we know the back of the house was built in 1895.
But there was a mezuzah
somewhere? Oh, yeah, on the front. Well, most of the houses had them.
Well, I think the rule is, if you're going to go by doing things correctly, is if it's a Jewish family moving in, you're not supposed to take the mezuzah off. You should leave it for them.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not a Jewish family, I might be wrong, but that's what I've been told.
Well, it was obviously... You can take it. I would say it was from the 40s, because... Mm-hmm. Or the 50s. I mean, I don't know how old. It might have been much older than that, but I think the last Jewish family...
were the Wax family.
And they probably left in the 50s.
Yeah, Pharaoh. So, I'm not sure what nationality they were.
But it was on our front door when we moved in.
Yeah.
Did it make you feel safer?
But it has to be somewhere.
Yeah.
Because we
wouldn't have thrown it out.
Oh, definitely wouldn't have thrown it out.
I don't know where it is. Yeah. Anyways,
we'll find it somewhere in the basement.
Yeah, one of these days we'll be cleaning up.
Where did your children go to school, and what was the school situation when you were living here with your family.
Our kids went to Huron, and we didn't think much of Lord Lansdowne, which was the alternative at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's gotten better, but at that time,
I think it has
wasn't the place to send your kids particularly.
And what about high school?
Oakwood.
They went to Oakwood. They definitely traveled for the music program.
Your children are musical, I gather.
Well, they went to Winona, which was a 7-8, because Huron only goes up to 6. Mm-hmm. So they started in music at Winona, and then most kids who were in the music program at Winona ended up going to Oakwood. So,
So they were commuting children.
The JCC, what was it at that time? Was it already at Bloor and Spadina when you moved here? It used to be down to Brunswick College.
It must have been. Yeah.
It was at Brunswick and College.
Yeah.
Oh. Not in a building that's still there.
Long time ago. 1950s. I think 1950s is when they built. If I remember the cornerstone.
Yeah, that's right. No, it was definitely built in the 50s architecturally. Yeah. So that was a bit before our time.
But I know you certainly use it. That's how you and I know each other.
I just used it for the athletic program. I've used it for the athletic program for a long time.
For me, it was never sort of an integral part of the community, and I was sort of almost surprised when you started going there.
With Bill... Yeah.
Wiley.
His name wasn't Wiley?
No. Okay. Bill.
Maureen and Bill.
Emery.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
He really reached out to the community and really made it an integral part of it.
Oh, yeah. He invited in the Residents Association, and we'd have meetings. They began to feel more sort of friendly about the JCC, but up to then it was sort of a place where, the Jewish people met. That was their thing, you know.
It wasn't part of the community at all. And then I think it was Bill that started the Bloor Street Festival. He was an extraordinary person.
I was on the board of directors at the JCC and worked very closely with him.
I don't know enough about the Jewish immigration patterns. That's wrong, but families began to move back into the center and to look for religious education for their children and a place to worship. And suddenly, like the little synagogue on Brunswick. It was on its way out. And suddenly there was this massive revival. And so a lot of that has happened in the last 15,
people
20 years.
Commute down. Now they from north of St. Clair.
And there was a synagogue on the north side of Sussex that became an art school.
Yeah, that's at the northeast corner.
Yeah, but that was a synagogue.
Sussex.
I think when we moved in, that was still a synagogue.
Definitely a synagogue when we moved in. Yeah. Yeah.
And then it became an art school, didn't it?
It became the art school, and then whatever it is now, the Greenpeace or whatever.
But that was a going concern. But again, as that immigration moved, as they became wealthier and moved out of the neighborhood, that all sort of... I think that's why the JCC was not... It wasn't part because it wasn't thriving, I think.
It wasn't as welcoming to everybody else. And then... people came back, and Bill reached out and made it clear that it's for everybody.
So it's definitely a force in the neighborhood now, which it wasn't 30 years ago or 40 years ago.
Well, that's interesting for me to learn how instrumental Bill was in making that happen.
Very much.
Yeah.
Very, very much.
Good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We used to have an auto repair place. I think it was sort of a body shop.
Where is that?
On Brunswick. Right beside the Werfels.
Oh, and the chicken place.
There was the chicken place right down...
Right next to the park on Brunswick.
No, that was farther south.
A chicken
There's a chicken shop.
Yeah, that was just about two north. That was right beside the pottery place.
But just north of the... There's a little tiny, not a park, but there's that little green space in between that they...
Oh, no, that's where the auto repair shop used to be, right beside the Werfels.
Okay.
So that, they tore that down and the city said, it's a non-conforming use. They turned it into a park.
But I thought just next to that is where the chicken
farmer
was.
No.
Anyway.
But there used to be a chicken, I don't know whether they'd butcher them there, but there's certainly a good kosher butcher.
The kosher butcher is fabulous.
So where is that?
Just north of the pottery place.
North of the pottery place.
And we used to have a coach house, a place for funeral coaches, right across the street from
a huge garage of some sort.
I don't know how huge it was, but you know, they used to maintain funeral coaches. So that was a strange part of the neighborhood. So I could show you which building it was, but they've still got the lane going in beside and the coach house in the back.
So those are some big and interesting changes.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about the chicken guy. I mean, he had fantastic chickens.
Kosher, too.
But that means they were fresh. They were probably organic and grain-fed and non-antibiotic-free.
And then we used to have the guy that fixed small engines just south of where the driving school is at Brunswick.
Oh, I've just remembered something. The guy who used to sharpen knives, he used to walk around.
Yeah, that's right.
And then there was another guy with a truck. Yeah. He used to come around and sell cherries and strawberries and things off the back of this truck.
Yeah.
But the guy with the knives used to walk around with this big wheel, ringing his bell and going up and down the streets.
Yeah.
That's right, I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, and then they used to have the truck that came with the funny music to drag all the kids out for ice cream.
They're not allowed to play that anymore, evidently.
You mean that song, or have those
the
tracks?
Song? I gather. Yeah. I think they have to be quiet. I don't think they can. It's probably dangerous.
Children come running across streets and whatever.
So you're saying you came here at the tail end of the Spadina Expressway. It had already been defeated.
That had been decided, yeah.
But you would have fought it like crazy, knowing that we were there just as that first wave
of counselors, the Carl Jaffries and the Colin Vaughns, and there was a whole, John Sewell came at part of that movement, so that whole new bunch
of... Jane Jacobs moved up to Toronto from New York.
Yeah, I think... Bill Archer was the counselor, and he was a kind of a retrograde, kind of old dinosaur kind of a guy. But the new counselors came in and sort of rebuilt the city. You know,
it was sort of an exciting time for Toronto, actually.
Yeah.
But could you imagine our neighborhood had the expressway come through it?
It would have gone.
Yeah. Then there was Alan Sparrow, who was our counselor here, and... Now, did he kick someone in the balls in council, or was he kicked in the balls? At any rate, there was quite a fracas. It wasn't just a shouting match. There was actually a kick to the groin that was quite famous at one point.
And what was that was about the Spadina or about something else?
I can't remember what it was about, but the politics were spicy there. I mean, it was a big deal in those days, getting progressive councillors elected. You know, you just don't think about it. You just assume that Olivia Chow and Adam Vaughn are going to win, you know. But in those days, it was real visceral.
Yeah.
And before us, I mean, they had communists, before our time, they had communist reps here, you know, during the war or whatever in the 30s. So it was, and then it became conservative with Larry Grossman, and then over to Bob Wong, and, you know, so in the Dan Heap days. When, who did Dan Heap beat? You know what? Dan Heap came in when the Liberals tried to run Jim Coutts. And even I went out and voted to get Jim Coutts out of town because he was Trudeau's appointed boy, you know, who was going to come in.
Parachuting him in.
And then Peter Stollery tried to run here and he didn't have any success. That's the politics in here.
Did you ever have a wonderful memory of this? The lineage. What about Rochdale? Was that before you came, or was
Rochdale? Was in the university.
But it was enormous when I came.
Oh, it was still going on when you were here.
Oh, yeah.
Before it got
so
turned
in what way? I mean, did it impact on people living here?
Didn't have much impact on our neighborhood.
Not an actual impact, sort of a psychological this is part of our close neighborhood. I mean, there are people jumping out of windows in drug stupors.
Well, they had barricaded floors that the police couldn't get into, and it was just something.
Yeah, that, I think that had stopped. By the time I got here, to Toronto, it was more sort of the hippie haven, and downstairs was the vegan restaurant with those guys with the white turbans.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah,
the huge tall white
that's
turbans and the wrappings around there.
Yeah.
All dressed in white.
Yeah.
Well, I think I have covered what I was hoping to cover with you. And of course what I have a list here, but I kind of jumped into wherever you were. Yeah. But I'm wondering if, obviously you gave it some thought because you sent me an email, but I'm wondering if there's anything that you've been thinking about that I didn't bring up at all that we can talk about before we say goodnight. And I do appreciate you making this list because I'm going to take these people's numbers, names and numbers from you.
Yeah.
Anything at all?
I can't think of anything else. I mean, probably as soon as I put my head on the pillow, I'll think of more things, but we can continue the discussion.
But you think we've covered a lot of the significant changes.
Right now,
I don't know. I think one of the things was we all felt a bit like pioneers.
Yeah, very much so.
As if we all had sort of common goals and a common understanding.
Yeah,
in the 70s and 80s, all the people that were moving in, you sort of understood each other.
Yeah.
And I think that has disappeared.
Yeah.
It's about money now. I think because it's become such an expensive place.
So that's a bit of a loss.
That's a loss.
Yeah. It is a loss.
We were definitely urban pioneers moving into this place that people were telling us was a slum, and rejuvenating it to... Well, with people like us, you know, it was kind of this neat thing we were doing.
Yeah, I mean, just the word pioneer says that you were building something with the community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was all part of what kept Toronto. I mean, we were a small little segment of what kept Toronto as an interesting urban experiment, whereas in the United States, urban centers were dying here, it began to thrive. Now, it's not quite the same way, but in those days...
Well, this was just after the days when they were doing... Well, probably they built Alexander Park. I don't remember them. Maybe it was built just before we came, but that was maybe done in the 60s and we came in the 70s. But they were doing urban renewal and wiping out huge blocks and putting up Alexander Parks and Regent Parks and, you know... So we were the next generation after that, rebuilding these communities and making use of them.
You know, when you go east towards the beaches area, but on the waterfront, they have some very large groups of homes that they've created. And they're making it look like what we have here. I don't know if you've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
Greenwood, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're really... emulating what we have here.
That's right. Yeah. Well, this is the new urbanism, is what we have. There's an architectural movement to recreate cities, not like Don Mills and Richmond Hill, but create what we've got. This is considered pretty ideal.
when I moved here in 1968, I had one son, became pregnant with my second son, and the landlord owned, it was a three floor, so... The landlord lived on the first floor.
Mm-hmm.
We rented the second and third floor, but we used the second floor, and we rented the third floor.
Oh my goodness,
yes! Because it was too expensive for us, even in 68.
Yeah.
In 1971, when we moved in, I mean, Bob and I were both working. We had no debts. We both, for that time, earned a decent, not a fantastic salary, but a decent salary. And we couldn't afford our house.
Yeah.
We were looking at that point to buy something for $35,000, $38,000. And of course, the real estate agent starts from there and works you up to a more expensive one. So we rented all the rooms in our house to friends of ours. We had people on the third floor, we had people in the back.
So how many people were living under your roof? Did you have?
Well, we had the back half of the house was one apartment.
Was separated at that point. There was a wall and so...
Oh, and then you opened it up and
they had the back entrance, we had the front entrance.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we had two friends as roomers living on
the
third floor.
And we lived on the main floor and on the second floor.
Off the front of the house.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then when we got our mortgage paid off, I guess What came first? The apartment went?
When our mortgage paid off, we got the apartment. No, so we had kids, and then we needed the third floor. So So at that point,
people left the apartment. The apartment went first, I think, and then the room. We still had the rooms. No, we got rid of the rooms first. The kids moved up to the third floor, and then that's right. Then we took down the wall, and moved back into the back,
of the house.
So now it's just two of us in this great big house. Used to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people living in it, you know?
Once the kids were there, we still had
people upstairs for the first couple of years until they needed the rooms.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, we'll say goodnight for now. Okay. I just want to say thank you.
Good.
And thank you, Bob.
If we haven't taken calls, and what time is it?
9:30.
Anyway,
we're doing okay.
You've really given us a tremendous amount of very interesting information and noted a lot of changes that have occurred in the last 40 years. So thank you both.
Do you have a pad I can write these names on?